That's when good neighbours become good friends. That's from Neighbours, yes. The jingle goes in that Aussie soap, doesn't it? Neighbours of Ramsey Street, which I don't watch. Well, I sometimes watch the end of it because, as some of you know, I'm a fan of Home and Away. Summer Bay, you know, closer each day, Home and Away, as I go, which I won't sing the rest of it. I won't sing any of it, I don't think. But friends, they say you can't choose your family. I suppose that's true up to a point, but I mean, Alison and Warwick clearly chose each other. I mean, some parts of the family we choose and others we don't, do we? But they say you can choose your friends. And Jesus, in our gospel reading, said his disciples are his friends. And I want to make 4 points, fairly briefly. You can count them down, you see, in your minds, if you want to. Firstly, it was and is a tremendous affirmation of them and of us. They were a motley crew of ordinary people, just like us. They struggled to get and understand what he said and did, just like us. They blew hot and cold in their relationship with him, just like us. They didn't always see eye to eye with each other, just like us and other Christians. But despite all that, Jesus saw the potential in them. Though you could say he made poor choices of friends. After all, one betrayed him. One denied him. That's 2 out of 12. And the other 10 fled when he was arrested. Though when he needed them most, they were nowhere to be seen. But actually, he knew their weaknesses. Just as he does ours. He didn't convince himself that they were perfect. So we should be encouraged, however we feel today, because Jesus calls you and me his friends. Not that it will always be an easy ride for us, all sweetness and light. Because secondly, Jesus attracted controversy and even notoriety in his life. And if he'd been alive today, with all the media pressures and everything else, he'd have been very much more in the news. It wasn't an easy, quiet life for his friends, because Jesus broke the mould. He didn't actually fit the picture people had of the Messiah. And you don't have to look very far in the Gospels to see some of the ways in which he attracted controversy. Firstly, he and his friends broke Sabbath. They picked ears of corn on it, and he healed on the Sabbath. And when he was picked up on this, he said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. I think he would have fallen out with the Lord's Day Observance Society. Jesus and his disciples didn't fast like John and his disciples. They didn't wash their hands ceremonially before eating. And they were called drunkards and gluttons. Yes, that's quite encouraging, perhaps. They clearly enjoyed themselves. I mean, Jesus was invited to weddings and things like that. And Jesus touched a leper, the uncleanest of the unclean. You can imagine that was the sort of moment magnified. You remember when Princess Diana was photographed holding the hand of someone who was dying of AIDS? Because in those days, when she did that, you didn't touch people who had AIDS. They were shunned, not understood. Well, Jesus thought nothing of touching a leper. And I can imagine a fairly lively correspondence in the Church Times or Methodist Recorder about these topics. You wouldn't find it in the Baptist Times. That's now only online. And for someone like me, who's a total technophobe, I have just got a flat screen television. So I'm just about in the 20th century now, not the 21st. You know, it's vanished. But he wouldn't only have been in the religious press these days. I think he'd have been in the national news too. I'm not giving you the complete picture of his life, but things you can find quite easily in the Gospels that he did and said. He said people should pay their taxes to Caesar, which, with Rome being the occupying force, would have caused a stir, certainly among some people. At a society dinner, he was anointed by what the Bible calls coyly a sinful woman, or a woman of ill repute. And he was not remotely fazed by it. Other people at the dinner said, well, if he's who he said he was, he'd know this woman was a bad lot and shouldn't have anything to do with her. You can see the tabloid headlines, no smoke without fire and everything else. In the village once, a local lady of ill repute came to one of our services. And one or two of the congregation made it quite clear that they rather hoped she wouldn't come again because it would get us a bad name. So I think we might have been equally surprised if we'd been in the company of Jesus and he'd accepted the lavish anointing of this woman. He would have been judged soft on adultery when he failed to condemn a woman caught in the very act. You can see there, on the TV chat show, oh yes, Jesus, I know you told her to leave her life of sin, but no condemnation or threat. Then in Luke chapter 12, he talks about values. Well, surely he couldn't have been more out of touch than he was. People would say he needs to get real. Don't worry, he says, about food and clothing. That'd be no good for the retail industry today. And in Matthew, he says, don't worry about tomorrow. I see the headlines, feckless. Bad for banks and insurance, certainly. And as for love your enemies and all that talk about camels and needles eyes and rich people, I think it'd be a political and economic suicide note. Loving your enemies in the modern world. Ridiculous, isn't it? You can see the headlines. No wonder people in power turned against him. And then just imagine the tabloids today. He's single. He spends 3 years with a dozen men. One of whom it said he loved, John chapter 20 verse 2 if you want to see it. They'd put two and two together and make 350. And he'd be crucified in the media. Actually, of course, he really was crucified. For views and deeds just like this. And life was tough for his friends. So given that this is part of what comes with him, do we want Jesus as a friend? Well, thirdly, he says, you're my friends if you do what I command you. And it was to love one another. And what does this mean? Well, some of you at your wedding services might well have had part of 1 Corinthians 13 read. And you get home, look at verses 4 to 7 of that well-known chapter. Well, we read about love. It says we're to be patient and kind. We're not to envy, not to boast, not to be proud, not to be self-seeking, not easily angered. We should not keep a record of wrongs. We should protect, trust, hope, and persevere. Well, what wonderful aspirations. Like a sort of government policy on what we want is wealth and prosperity for everyone and peace. All those things that are wonderfully easy to say. Quite another thing to do, because we don't measure up to these aspirations remotely, do we? Most of the time. Especially when we've had a bad day or are stressed or tired or anxious. Because we can so easily lapse into impatience. We can easily get angry. We can tot up slights. Real or imagined. And if two of us are feeling stressed and tired and anxious, well, it kicks off, doesn't it? And multiplies. And each one, whether it's an individual or a nation. The interesting point is, of course, that if one person in the argument actually does still try to be patient and kind and not easily angered, there's a fighting chance that the thing can be defused, isn't it? Which is a way of saying perhaps that God's love actually can work in everyday relationships. But we so often louse it up that it's no wonder that Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. Which of course sounds pretty grim. But it isn't the counsel of despair that you might think it to be. Because finally Jesus doesn't write us off, because he says, love one another as I have loved you. And that list from 1 Corinthians 13 is how God is, how he regards us, how he treats us. And it is amazing and really hopeful. He knows all about us. He knows my major weaknesses and the small ones, and he knows your major weaknesses and the small ones, the flaws in our characters, what turns us, you know, what flicks the switch in us. When you say something, it's like red rag to a bull. He knows the good as well. But knowing all about us, he loves us. We see this in how Jesus treated his disciples after the resurrection. They had failed him utterly. They knew they'd made a total and absolute mess of it. They must have won. He knew they'd made a total mess of it as well. And when he comes to them, what does he say? He doesn't say, look, we've got to get things straight here. You utterly let me down. You've got a lot to do to rebuild our relationship. No, he doesn't say that. He comes with reassurance and encouragement and restoration. Even Peter, who's denied him, is restored. We see God's amazing love in action, big time, as they say today. And that's the best news of all. And I trust that we'll be glad to be called friends of Jesus. I pray that each one of us may respond every day of our lives so that we may come to know him more clearly, love him more dearly, and follow him more nearly, day by day. As I say, it won't be an easy ride all the time, but you know, it will be the journey of a lifetime.